Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Showtime! I use the bathroom.
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies at a Lincoln bath. For the show name, go direct to DLNGS.org. And the IC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1012 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show today, we have Joel.
Good evening. And that's
and
it.
Joel. And Joel. Hey, man. So get this, Joel. Right? I've been working most of the summer on migrating our stuff over to Workload Identity. And it's been going swimmingly well. There's only been two hiccups. The one hiccup, which I have absolute no control over, and the thing that my fellow developers dislike the most, is that when you go to run the application locally, under service account impersonation, you have to authenticate to Google, which is a two-step process every time. So basically, when you run the command to do the account impersonation, it calls up a tab in your browser that says you're running Google's login application default credentials authentication. Is this the right account? Is this your account or whatever it is? It's like, list your account name there. And if you have more than one account, you could choose or whatever. Like I have two accounts, my personal account in Google and my work account. And so I give them the opportunity to choose. And I say, I click on my work account, and then it says, are you sure you want to do this? And I click, of course I want to do this, and boom, it's done. And then when you're done, you kind of have to repeat the process. Like if you're going to revoke the credentials, it pops up that same thing, and then it verifies that it's you, and you want to. So it's a two-step process to start the app, and it's a two-step process when you're finished with the app. And I get it. It's kind of annoying, especially if you're like running a debug session. But I largely did it the way I did it out of convenience for the developers so that they don't have to think about whether they're going to log in or whether they're going to do, what they have to do to get the account impersonation working. And of course it's been a mixed bag there anyway, but we suffered through it, right? Because the other thing is that it doesn't circumvent us from having to do the authentication because we're using the Google standard way for doing things. Like this is the way that Google wants you to do it, is that it wants you to authenticate with the application default credentials instead of using, like I talked about in the past, the security key, that the service account key. This way you don't have to pass that stuff around or worry about it. But it is a little bit of a pain in the ass. We had some further discussions about it. And the other option they were floating around was instead of, impersonating the account, we can make sure that our developer accounts have all the rights that these applications need to run, right? And run them under our own accounts without having to do the impersonation thing. The downside to that is if you are developing under your own account, and this is like a new application or you're connecting to a new Google service, unless you run that application under the Surface account it's supposed to run under, you do not know whether you've messed something up and not given permissions to whatever it is that it would need to access. So there is that risk. So keep that in mind. We're going to come back to that. The other thing was one of our applications wasn't as easy to port over, and it was the last one that I was going to be working on. Anyway, I had just one application to go. I finished all the other ones. In fact, I actually just deployed the last one to our production environment today. It's been sitting there for like over a week waiting to go to production. So it's been ready. That this has been largely finished. And then my coworker, got a bug up his ass that he wants to look at Cloud Run. And what Cloud Run is Google's managed compute platform that will allow you to run containers directly on Google's infrastructure instead of having to run them through Kubernetes. It essentially abstracts out all that containerization work that you would have to kind of do to get it into a Kubernetes cluster and having to deal with however you're going to deploy it into the Kubernetes cluster, so you don't have to set up a cluster and you don't have to figure out how you're going to deploy it in a cluster. We have GKE running, Google Kubernetes cluster environment, and then we also use Helm to deploy the applications, Helm charts and everything. You don't need to do that. All you need to do is have your application. Ideally, you'd want to make sure it is, you know, going to work in a container, but it probably is. You know, and it supports like pretty much every single language. So long as, you know, you could use Google's container, or you could specify a container that you want it to run under, like the image. But regardless, we looked into doing that. So taking our Kubernetes applications that are running in GKE and moving them into Cloud Run, which at first kind of makes like all the work I did for workload identity get ready to be thrown out the fucking window, right? But yes and no. So instead of doing the workload identity in the Kubernetes environment, all that work that I did to get us to that, into doing that, is applicable to what we need to do to get it in the Cloud Run. So if we hadn't done that, if I hadn't done that workload identity work, moving us over to the workload identity so that we're using the service accounts, impersonating them, and also migrating us from Vault to Google Secrets, we wouldn't have been able to smoothly transition into Cloud Run. So essentially, all we had to do was take our application, our repository, and then just deploy the code. Like, there's a gcloud command to deploy the code right into the Cloud Run environment. And it worked swimmingly well the first time we did it. It worked perfectly, it seems. So as far as we could tell, it's working perfectly. So we got it up and running. One of our applications, which is our main one, which is the search interface, the navigation interface, I guess. I don't want to call it the navigation because there's a whole separate navigation element, but it's like, it's called our content discovery. It is what the users interact most with to find their assets, be them stories, videos, images, whatever, that they have written. This is like the main interface for the CMS that we have running. And so what we did then is, instead of pointing Fastly to the container running in GKE, we pointed it to the container running in Cloud Run. And voila, it was working perfectly. So the next step was what we worked on in the past couple of days. It was putting, so to give you a little clarification here, we have all the applications running in containers locked down with a whitelist that they are not at all accessible to the public. They're not even accessible to us directly. You have to go through Fastly, and we have all our authentication set up in Fastly code. So it interacts with our authentication application that works with Okta, and it's all done, you know, managed largely through Fastly, of how that's done. So when you authenticate, it has to be done through Fastly. Fastly verifies the authentication, and if you're not authenticated, redirects you to authentication through Okta. And so if you can't authenticate through Okta, you ain't getting to our application, right? But with the Cloud Run side of things, we don't have that flexibility to put in a whitelist to lock it down. There's a couple other ways to do that. What we have to do is kind of put it behind a load balancer. So there's a, we follow the documentation for Cloud Run on setting up a multi-regional load balancer. Just to see if we could get it to work. Now, of course, we ran into permissions problems, which has nothing to do with the Google side of things, really. It's just the way our organization is structured and certain things that you can do and certain things that you cannot do, because we, by and large, do not interact directly with the services. We interact with, hold on one second. I got to call you back. We don't interact with, like the console. We have access in the console, but generally our, the way that we operate is kind of like we build the code to deploy our infrastructure. But anyway, what it boils down to is, we have to do all this stuff in Terraform, and then Terraform gets applied into our environment, into the Google environment using Scalar. Scalar has policies applied to it that don't allow us to do certain things. Like, it doesn't allow us to give us complete permissions to do whatever we want in the Google platform. At the project level or cross project level, there's those kind of restrictions. So we were immediately blocked from doing any networking stuff in our project, but that wasn't a big deal because there was another project that we needed to do it in. So we did that, and the Google documentation was a little confusing, and it had, and the one thing I would complain about the most is that in Terraform, are you familiar with Terraform, Joel?
I've heard it. We use it, but I don't use it personally.
Okay. So, like, in Terraform, you have a resource, and then you kind of give that resource, I don't want to call it a label or a tag because there's other things in there that are labels and tags, but you say this resource, which is a defined resource, for whatever it is that you want to be, like an IAM policy or a service account or whatever. So it's like a Google service account. So you say this resource, Google service account, and I'm going to call it, Dan's account, right? But that's just a label for that in the Terraform. So then in the actual resource, when you're defining it, the resource has a name. All right, and then that name would be like Dan's my name or whatever, and that would be the name of the service account, right? So the name that you applied to the resource when you're defining the resource, well, when you're writing out the resource, is not the same, necessarily the same name that you're going to give the resource when you're defining name for that resource. A little confusing. But in Google's documentation, they essentially gave the resource label slash tag slash name, all of them the same. They all named them LB underscore default. And then the names of the resource inside the definition followed something similar to that. It was like LB something or whatever it was. So when we got down to it, it was really difficult to tell what was like the load balancer and what was the service that it was supposed to be connecting to. So in a sense, like, we need to define an IP address, but that's going to be for the load balancer. Okay. And then we also need to have a backend, but that's going to be the application. And then we need what's called the network group, which holds the backends. So that would need to be called by the service or the application we're connected to. And then there is the proxy, which is what connects the load balancer to the applications. So there could be more than one service or application in the proxy. And then there's a forwarder, which I believe is what forwards into the, from the load balancer to the application. So it got really confusing to try and figure out what was like the load balancer and what was going to be pointing towards the service or application. Because we're going to have multiple of these services going for this one load balancer. So the naming construction was a little hit or miss. We finally figured it out by actually getting it deployed. And I was completely floored that the moment we deployed this, Joel, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked perfectly. I was like, this can't be happening, man. It never works out like this. The first time we deploy this thing, it's working. That makes no sense. It shouldn't be like that. But it did. It did. And we were happy. Anyway, so we're looks like we're going from right from workload identity straight into Cloud Run. I have mixed feelings about it. I have to be honest. We're, you know, businesses, whatever, you're always trying to save money and all that stuff and make things as simple as possible. I will say it feels like when I first started with the company, they had a managed hosting solution, which was their own data centers and their own in-house tools that they're going to use to take the code that the developers have produced, and we get it and package it up and deploy it in a unified manner. And so we've kind of gone from all that stuff being built in-house to now we're essentially at the point where we just develop the application and give it to Google and they host it and everything's in. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to build the server anymore.
Yep.
It's just shoving the application. So it's like little by little by little, that infrastructure side is getting eaten away. You know what I mean? Yep. And I don't know how I feel about that, you know? On the one hand, I see it. There's still a lot that needs to be done. I mean, it's always changing, and it's not like my job becomes obsolete, but you can see how it starts to get picked away a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yep.
Well, I have talked a goodly amount, Joel. I'll let you go for a bit.
All right, I got a good one. We had a not this past week, but the week before it, we struggled through. Yeah, client, all of a sudden, can't take checks. All right. And in our situation, the check processed e-check, that's like they submit the check from the cashier's office, and it processes it, makes sure that, you know, the check can be paid and all that stuff. All right. So, and that particular process doesn't go through the payment gateway, which is a Windows hosted server. It goes direct from our system. All right. Well, all of a sudden, they stop being able to do that. So when I go into the listener where it would be routed from, and it's a Java based program, and we go into the folder, and it looked like nothing was there, there was no Java extensions, all the extensions that it needed for processing checks. So I'm like, what in the world? So I couldn't figure it out, and I'm like, well, let's get our platform team involved. They're supposed to be the OS experts, right? At least that's the way they are. They couldn't figure it out either. So we got on a call with the engineering team and myself, and I think we had the platform expert in there. And one of the other guys says, well, have you tried issuing Echo Star from the directory? For those who don't know, if you do an Echo Star, it will produce a list of, you know, basically the list of the files that are in that directory. Okay? So we do that, and I get files. And then I'm thinking, well, what the heck? All right, so what happened? So I said, let me try something. So I went up one directory, and then I did an LSALRT / I think it was / extension or something. So they basically was looking at that directory from a different location, and lo and behold, there were the files. But guess what was at the top of the list?
What?
An empty file called LS.
Really?
Yep. So if you changed into the directory, instead of executing the normal LS, it executes that file, which, of course, doesn't do anything because it's file. So that was part of the problem. The other was...
Wait.
Yeah.
What was that Linux?
Yes, it was. On
so,
Red Hat, yep.
Is your path, is the thing that it does first when it goes to execute something, is look in the current working directory?
Apparently.
Oh, that's weird.
So, so I got rid of that file, and I can see that, you know, I can change it in the directory, see the files as I normally should. But another thing, too, and this is where the automation, they wrote some automation to stop start. And it's dependent on a file in profile D, basically a shell script which loads the environment variables and stuff like that, right? So, because that there's a line in there that sets the username to whatever user that you want to execute all the services, it started everything up as the wrong user because that their automation was dependent on that file. So I had the overnight team fix all the files, permissions, and they fixed the elution.sh script, which is the script that loads all the profile, and now it starts up correctly. It doesn't fuck the usernames of all the files in there. So now, guess what? They can take checks. And that's all he had to do. But it's like, you know, and this goes back towards where the people who write the automation, like if you've got a different set of people writing the automation, and they don't know the application, get somebody who knows the application to help them write the automation. But so that was a good one.
Nice.
Yeah, we fix that. We fix that. And, you know, so, you know, things are getting better on our team. The one great thing about my new boss that I started with at the beginning of the year was I'd known her for a long time. I trust her. She's going to be a half day on her point of contact tomorrow. So she actually will stand up for our team. So if the other teams start to crap on us, she's right there to watch our back. So, but, that's cool. And I got another radio last week. I saved up enough cash. Yaesu, has their own digital voice, system called System Fusion. And they have a relatively affordable handheld, the Yaesu FT70D, which is, the D stands for digital. And you can use it for, like, the same old analog repeaters that I've used for years and years and years. But you can also use the digital features. And it also happens to work with the hotspot I bought, like, a month or so ago. So... set it up, finally got everything working. The only thing I don't have quite right yet is when I want to go from using the hotspot in the car, in the house to the car. What it may end up boiling down to is I might just buy another one of the hotspots and just keep it in the car. I can save up enough cash for that pretty quickly, but, just cause it's nice to play around with it and chat when you're mobile. Like I talked to a guy on the one of the Ohio Reflector channels as I was going to lunch today. I met up with somebody else from there's quite a few people in my company that work in this area, so I met up with someone that works. She works in a different department. But we had lunch at Carrabba's. It was pretty decent. I got a salad. I got a Caesar salad with shrimp on it. It was pretty good. That was fun, but it was fun just talking on that radio while I was going from point A to point B. And I think for me, the digital modes is making ham radio a lot more fun now, because I'm gonna tell you, if I go to one of the repeaters and tune it up and I throw my call sign out and nobody comes back, I'm like, if nobody comes back, I can always switch over to the digital ones. And there's somebody in this world or country that wants to yammer about different things, so so that's, see, that's the last tech purchase I made. I think we're gonna start planning our vacation for next year early, because I think I got the wife talked into, we're gonna go take a trip to Florida. She's never been there, and I said, well, if it's just to see the ocean, we can go to Virginia Beach.
Yeah, there you go.
And she's like, oh, I've already been there. I'm like, all right. So looking at Cape Canaveral, I found a place. There's a place where they Royal Mansion Resort, I think is what they call it. But it's essentially a bunch of condominiums, and they're all owned by different people. But you go to one place to rent it for the week. It's actually very reasonable. It's like, I think the most expensive one's $150 a night. And it's essentially a full apartment, furnished apartment with a TV, fully functional kitchen. They have a pool at the condominium area and a hot tub. And of course, it's right on the beach. So I don't know if we're going to do that or not, but we'll see. I mean, we could go stay closer into Orlando and then just drive down to the beach and to, the only other place I even care about going down there is Kennedy Space Center. I've never been there, and I want to see it. always thought I'd be there, but when I was in high school, I wanted to be an astronaut.
There you go.
Didn't really happen, but
oh.
I'm glad it turned the way I wanted it to, though.
There you go. Oh, man, Joel, on Saturday night, I was... What was Saturday? Oh, yeah, my daughter finished her
swimming
camp. No, she had. Oh. She also had a camp. Was put on by her school, and it was a 3-week camp, I think it was, Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., all those days, and it was a musical camp, I guess it was, where they put on a presentation of Mean Girls Junior. So they had to audition and then practice. So she would go to swim practice in the morning and then go over to the camp and then be dead at the end of the day. But anyway, she had two shows, Friday night and Saturday. We went to both of them. And then afterwards, we went out to dinner. And when I came home, we were just going to hang out and do stuff. And like, so I'm kind of like not, I'm on call all the time, but kind of like it's known that I'm on call for certain things. Like when people can't figure something out because it's largely an infrastructure issue.
Right.
And all that. But it's been, as our team has shrunk a little bit, they've called on me more frequently to do stuff, like stuff that I'm not really familiar with doing on a regular basis. But be that as it may, I got pinged on Saturday night at about, I'm going to say it was probably around 7 something, maybe a little earlier than that. But what had happened was one of our users, reporter, was in New Zealand covering the woman's tennis, whatever's going on over there. I'm not sure. I don't know the world. I don't know what's going on in New Zealand. I can't remember what sporting event it is. I don't know. Well, she was over there, and when she was trying to access certain things with updating articles and stuff like that, it wasn't working for her. She was getting like a redirect error with too many redirects. And so we started digging into it, and there were no problems that we could identify, right? The applications were working. All the services were working. Nobody else was complaining. It's just this one person. And the first level support had already walked her through a whole bunch of different things. You know, like clearing the cache and doing all that kind of stuff. And I guess the thing that kind of frosted me a little bit was that this person had arrived in New Zealand on Wednesday, from the start was having problems, and didn't say anything till Saturday night. Like, nobody's around to fix these problems on a Saturday night. You know what I'm saying, Joel? You know what I'm saying? You still there?
Oh, yeah, I keep hitting the wrong damn button. But, yes, I'm with you.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was really weird. And so, troubleshooting steps was, okay, so clearing the browser cache doesn't work. Using a different browser doesn't work. Is there a network issue? Let's try a VPN, connecting onto the VPN. Well, with the VPN, she couldn't connect back to anything in the United States, apparently. I don't know why. But she could connect to Tokyo. And Tokyo was having the same problem. So we thought, you know, that's a little weird. It's just this one person. There are no errors being reported, nothing in the logs, nobody else is having a problem. So the next thing was like, well, maybe there's something wrong with her system. Does she have access to another machine that she could just try something else out? Well, eventually found out that she had an iPad. She tried her iPad, got the same thing, right? So I was looking on our VPN that we have a connection into Australia. So I connected the VPN to Australia and tried to do some stuff, and I couldn't replicate the problem. So this was a huge challenge. We couldn't see the problem, and one person was having that issue. Nobody else was having it. The other guy who was on call that I was working with was able to connect. He had a VPN on his personal computer, which he was able to connect into a point in New Zealand. And then he was able to replicate the problem. But the difficulty was is he couldn't share a screen that we could see what was going on. But eventually I was able to replicate the problem by connecting in Australia. And it was like really intermittent and hit and miss. But it took a few days of debugging and all sorts of stuff trying to figure this out. But what it ultimately came down to, we figured out, and I kind of thought this is what it was this morning, but we had to go through a whole bunch of other channels to actually nail this down with getting support from our engineering team, who was great in helping us out when we finally all got together. But what was happening was our health checks were being set too aggressively. The timeout value was a half a second, which is the default. And the time that, like the testing time, it would test I think it was 10 seconds. So it had a timeout of a half a second when checking, and it was checking every 10 seconds, which, you know, when all our data centers where we're located are in the United States. So it seemed that anything to the west, like the closest west of the international dateline, was just far enough away that it was taking longer to get like the health check, the Fastly side of things out there, when it would do the health check, was not receiving the response in time on probably 60 to 80% of the calls, thus flagging it down. So that would trip an error that was reporting the back ends down, but we had captured that error, which was an 801, and redirected the 801 to a 301, which is a moved permanently redirect. So it looked like it was just doing a loop, when in actuality, it was going and saying, we can't find a back end that's healthy. It's not working. But that was masked by the redirect that we had captured and replaced the error with. Because the 801 is like the 700 to 900 series of errors are Fastly errors. And so that was what was being reported back and being translated, you know, changed into a 301. Which is what I kind of thought about this morning. So we changed all the health checks to be a 5-second timeout instead of a half a second, and only check every minute, which is what our infrastructure team is doing and other places are doing too. So I just made it standard for them, and that solved the problem. But it was an interesting issue. Being a little too aggressive on the health check stuff. And we don't have users generally outside of the United States, maybe some in Europe, but like not too often do we have users in New Zealand or Australia.
Right.
So it was a crazy thing. Crazy thing.
It's like, hey Joe, it's like today we got, one of our clients said, hey, we saw this user log in because we were using their IDP. They can tell where we're logging in from, right? Well, we got these users that you guys use for services that logged in from these locations. And I'm like, yep, those are all normal. And I'm like, you know, well, they want to know is if you're doing this and you're doing that. And at that point, I relayed it off to the engineering team. I'm like, I'm not dealing with that. Because it wasn't a break-fix case in the first place, so it should never have come to us. But, you know, they got EOC routing tickets to us. They just say, oh, it's colleague, it goes here, and it always goes through us. And I'm like, and you talk about the, last minute stuff, you know, it's like, I was actually still working on this case. We have the application expert had ticket. Hey, so-and-so's not working. This particular function's not working. They're down. I'm like, they're not down. It's one function of the system that's not working. Okay. So, I collect the logs for them like yesterday, all right? Or yesterday or the day before. I sent to them, all right? That's what it was. They sent it to them before I left the day before on Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I go through all my day yesterday, and like 5:30, he's like, you know, after I'm technically off the clock, right? He's like, hey, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you finally sent me a message today? And then he asked me, well, what do you think? What's our next steps? I'm like, I don't know. You tell me. You're the application expert on this. I'm just being the guy to help get you logs. And I'm like, yeah, and you're doing this at the last, and, you know, after I'm technically off, and I heard you come through just because I'm secondary on call. I have been for the last 2 weeks, and I'll be primary next week. And I'm like, you know, you could have let me know before I left for the day, but here you go. Here's your answers. Then they asked me, looks like a load balancer problem. Like, it's never a load balancer problem, okay? Almost never with us, you know. And I'm like, if you're getting this message from on one of the servers, there's a problem on one of the servers. The code's fucked up. I don't know. It's like, not me, you know. And he's like, well, who can take things off the load balancer? I'm like, that would be the engineering team. And they're not going to do it either. That's what I wanted to tell them. I didn't tell them that, though. And what it boils down to is my application experts need to start realizing that taking it off a load balancer isn't always advisable or needed. It's like, you got to think outside the box, man, and think about how the modern technical infrastructure works. You know, it's not like you got a bunch of hardware sitting in the room where you can go and, like, plug and unplug things or move things around real quick and reconfigure it so this is outside of that realm. It's all cloud-hosted, buddy. And it all takes code to do that. And nice. I don't have the code or the right or the time to write the code to do it. It's like, we have to troubleshoot it how it is. That's the easiest way to fix our problem. Well, he ain't gonna listen, so. They'll learn.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Hey, granted, sorry, I ended up being late. Oh, did McKevin shut up on it all?
No.
No? Okay.
It was just me and Dan chattering for a little bit.
Nah. No Pat either? What's he been up to?
Maybe he's playing a gig.
Maybe.
Well, I know the big two movies that came out, I'm not interested in seeing either of them.
I'll probably eventually watch Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer I'm more likely to watch, but I can wait till it hits.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that in theaters because it is a 3-hour long movie.
I'm with you on that. I want to watch it in my recliner with some popcorn.
Ability to pause and go pee?
Yes, that too.
I did see Barbie.
Oh.
And it was fucking awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, I've heard some really good reviews.
It is really good.
I've heard some really, terrible reviews, too. Not as many as I have the good reviews, but people saying that the movie was really all over the place and didn't have all that much of a coherent story.
The things I've heard...
don't think that.
I was going to say, the things I've heard about is that it... For me, what I've heard and what I've read about it is that it seems to me that it's not really written for the audience who actually plays with Barbie.
No, it's more of a geared towards teenagers and adults. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But you know, kids would enjoy it too. It's kind of like one of those movies. It's like watching you know, if you watch Rugrats or like a lot of those Nickelodeon show cartoons that come out that are geared, you know, they're kid focused, but as an adult you pick up on so much other stuff that's written in there.
Right.
So it was a great movie. It was very well done and fun and funny and a little sad at some points, you know, but it was good. It was good.
Has anybody watched the first episode of the new Futurama?
I didn't know they had a new one yet.
Well, what's it out on? And
Hulu on the 24th.
I might have to watch it.
I did not know there was one that came out. So it came out on the 24th.
Right. I have not watched it either. I was checking.
And last week, Paramount Plus about Kill Me, because they released two new episodes of Strange New Worlds, with the second one being the Lower Decks crossover. And there's lots of people that just think it was oh so great, you know. And they're usually Lower Decks fans. I can't stand Lower Decks. It's just too silly. But, and then I heard that they're going to release a Strange New Worlds episode that's a musical. I'm like, seriously? In Star Trek? Yeah. It's like, the straight up episodes of that series are pretty good. Beyond that though, just tell some good stories and be done with it. Don't try and make it something it isn't. Anywho. I've been watching a lot of stuff on Tubi as well. Have you ever tried anything on Tubi, Dan?
Yes. I tried to watch... We watched... what was it called? Big Fish. And I tried to watch it on Tubi. Yep. And after 15 minutes, there was 5 commercials. And then the next 15 minutes, there were 5 commercials. So we just went and rented it on Amazon. It worked.
Now, granted, I'm watching mostly back catalog. So, I've been watching Babylon 5 on there. Because I believe the whole series is there. As is, if you haven't seen it yet, the 2009 edition of V. Which is basically a remake of the V series from the 80s.
Okay.
That's on there. And there were several movies I watched on there. I watched the Manhattan Project on there, which is a movie from 86. I don't know. That one is basically where a kid built a nuclear bomb. You might remember that one.
Wait, which movie?
The Manhattan Project.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's where John Lithgow plays a nuclear weapons scientist, and they put it in, like, his podunk town, Ithaca, New York, is where they put it at, his lab, and this kid manages to get a tour of the place and steals the plutonium. But I have been watching the Babylon 5 MV quite a bit more.
I don't know. You were talking about the Futurama on Hulu. The new season of What We Do in the Shadows started like 2 weeks ago, I believe it was. Oh my God, is last week's episode just off the wall bonkers and hilarious. Anyway. Sorry.
I don't watch a lot of new stuff, especially since there's not a lot of new stuff coming out right now. I think the fall TV season's going to be definitely behind. Yeah. Writer's strike, actor strike.
Hey, Joe, you posted this, you sent an email out.
Yeah.
About, you should talk about this. This is pretty interesting.
A couple weeks ago, Docker containers were compromised. I gotta bring this story up so I don't.
Wait, this article doesn't say about them being compromised.
Well, it says, it says thousands of images on Docker Hub leak off secret and private keys.
Right. And that's because when people are building their images, they're including things that they shouldn't be including into their images. Like, auth secrets and private keys. Like, no kidding, man. You shouldn't do that.
Yep.
Although,
I guess it depends on what you're building, you know?
Yeah, well, you shouldn't do that, number one. And if you find out that you have done that, you need to immediately revoke those keys and do some forensics on all that crap to make sure you haven't been compromised to begin with. And then get rid of those images. I mean, the damage is already, like, potentially done at that case. In that case. You gotta mitigate it as much as possible, which is immediately, you know, change all that stuff around.
Yep.
But that is interesting. Now, I will say I have done accidentally, it's, you know, you say, oh, don't be stupid and do that, but I have accidentally committed, like,
SSH key.
Well, I committed some secrets to a repo once, because I think I had talked about that when I was using the git archive command. I thought it was just going to give me the files into this new repo. And, so if you don't know, like, one of the things that you can do in a Node application, is that if you have a .env file at the root of the Node application, it could read that file in there and you would put things, you know, it would have like environmental variables in there that you could set. So if you were setting some secrets that you were going to use as environmental variables when the application is running, it could go into that .env file and read that. And then it makes it accessible to the application while it's running. Sometimes we have done that in the past for local development. And that is kind of what happened. When I did the archive, it was in a directory, or it was in a repo that I had been working in. And I thought that archive was just going to give me the files that were part of the repo, not any additional files that were not part of the repo.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dot file, so I didn't even notice it was in there.
Right.
So I made that mistake, and as soon as that happened and realized that it was, and these are all private repos to begin with, it was okay. Now, even though they are private repos, I got to go rotate all these keys and make sure that people don't haven't compromised anything, which it didn't happen, but be that as
right.
Be that
as. So the total, like, the further determine the use of the exposed secrets of the wild, the researchers used 15 month worth of internet-wide measurements provided by census database and found 275,269 hosts that rely on the compromised keys. That includes 8,674 MQTT and 19 AMQP hosts, 6,672 FTP hosts, 426 Postgres SQL databases, 3 Elasticsearch and 3 MySQL instances, 216 SIP hosts, 8,175 SMTP servers, 1,516 POP3 servers, 1,798 IMAP servers, 240 SSH servers, and 24 Kubernetes instances. That's quite a bit of crap.
So that first one, the messaging protocols.
Yeah, it's IoT.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if that's like related to those, like, just devices that people buy.
Yep.
Those off-the-shelf enabled devices.
Yeah, well, and that's like not too long ago, Anchor. Now, say what you will about Anchor. I have no problem with Anchor's power cables, their battery banks, but I would not buy anything beyond that from them. And that's because they had bought Eufy, EUFY, which is a security camera infrastructure, as well as the cameras themselves, and those were compromised not long back.
And so you'll never trust them again? Is that your motto? Once they fuck up, you're done with them?
No, not I'll trust them for things that don't involve that.
There you go.
I'll buy Well, I haven't bought an Anchor battery pack in a few years now. I've got my two primary battery banks that I use all the time are Tech Smarter ones. I think eventually I want to buy. Ugreen makes a 4-port USB-C hub, or not hub, charger that I want to get. That would replace, like, pretty much every USB-C charger I have sitting at my desk. Because I have, like, one for my phone, one for my iPad. I got a new iPhone for work.
Oh!
I got the iPhone 13 now. It's for work. I don't care. I don't use it for anything but work. But I got, I think it was our quarterly all hands, and I won like 500 bonusly points. Bonusly is like a point system thing that, people can give you points that you can use to buy things like, Amazon gift cards and stuff like that. So I had enough to get $50 in Amazon gift cards. So I bought, two of those, wireless, chargers that work with the MagSafe connector on the back of the phones. Got one downstairs and one upstairs. That also works with their AirPods as well. And I got a shade for my drone. When I'm flying my drone, I can put this shade on it if it's too sunny to see the screen. But the UV cameras is something I would not buy. And it's because, let's see, what was the deal on those? Oh, Because you can literally connect VLC directly to the camera's IP address and it'll stream the camera from anywhere on the internet.
So when you say a shade for your drone, do you mean like
it basically mounts over the top of the phone. Here I can send you a link. What it looks like.
So it's a shade for your phone?
Because the phone, you use the phone as a you can see the camera on your phone. Mostly because I didn't spend the extra money to get the other controller.
So why is it specific to your phone, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, it's not specific to my phone. It'll work with any phone that's connected to the controller.
Oh!
See?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense now.
And when it's bleeding hot and beaten down and I can't see the fucking screen because it's not bright enough, this helps.
How does that controller connect into your phone? Is it Bluetooth or?
No, you can't really see it in this picture. But there's a US, the way the antennas just pull out on a spring loaded thing.
Okay, I see it now.
Below that is a place where you store the cable and then you just pull the cable out, and this actually has a hole in the side of the shade that you can route the cable through to plug it into the phone.
Yeah, I can see if I look at the other pictures. Cause from that first picture, I'm like, all the phones I've had a USB on the bottom.
If you look at the before and after, you can see exactly what I'm talking about.
Because I'm looking at it, I'm like, how is that connecting into the side like that? But it's not. It's just holding it there, and then there's that cable that you can't see.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like this controller is better because I have the Mavic Mini 3, not the Pro one, but just the Mini 3. The only kind of downside is the Mini 3 doesn't have some of the collision avoidance. I think it only has like the forward. No, it doesn't have the forward collision avoidance. I think it's only the bottom. I have to look at. You can tell it which sensors it has. It doesn't have as many sensors as the Pro does, and it also don't do some of the things that my original Mavic Pro can do. But that's okay. The Mavic Pro still works too. I just got this one. It's a little smaller, and 9 times out of 10, I'm not gonna do anything stupid where I need the collision avoidance. But I may look at some of the other drones and maybe upgrade on down the road. But so far, this one does fine. It has a really good camera on it. That's all I really care about. The camera. I'm not flying this for competition or nothing, but it's neat. This one, my old one has the shade I got for it was actually a DJI product. This is not. And probably half the cost of it too is my guess. Excuse me. And that's the other kind of wild thing with DJI. They used to have their apps for flying the drones, and using the other products they have, like the pocket cameras I got. They used to be on the Play Store, but they removed them from the Play Store, and you have to sideload them. Kind of sucks. That's okay. Ideal. So how was your birthday last week, Joe?
It was good. I can't really complain.
Did you get cake?
Yeah, I had cake.
There you go.
My daughter made some lemon cake. It was actually really good.
Ooh.
And Jackie got some cupcakes.
Cupcakes.
Yep.
I've been relatively good when it comes. I actually started since my Pixel Watch has the Fitbit app, and I subscribe to the Pro Fitbit app. It includes a calorie log, your food log thing, and I started logging my food.
Yeah.
It's like today when I made the burgers, I also made tater rounds, which are essentially like tater tots. But the serving was 15 rounds, so that's, I counted 15 and that's all I ate. And it's not a lot. But it still tasted good. And we get the Carb Smart buns. Those are 50 calories per bun, which is fairly low for a bun.
Yeah, actually.
Yep. They taste good too. Is it a pretzel bun, which is what I prefer? No. Doesn't taste as good as it either. But it suffices.
Right. You have to make trades like that if you want to improve.
I've been, most days I'm slightly under, not exactly sure how it calculated the calories that I should be eating, but I'm slightly under it, and I am losing some weight finally, not slowly but early.
Like, well, what's your daily calorie count?
Pretty damn high. Let me see. Oh, Steve1989 just brought out another video. Yay!
Who?
Steve1989. He's the MRE guy on the YouTube. Let's see. I can't tell what... Well, my current count for the day, 2,700 in. With 329 left. And I'm probably not going to do anything but drink.
I'm sorry, what was that number?
I currently have 2,700 calories in, and there's 329 calories left for what they're saying I should be eating.
Oh, okay.
So, and most days, like I said, most days I've been under. I'm in the zone today. Monday I went over, but that's just because, I like hot Cheetos.
Yeah. Yeah, and those actually are a bit calorie dense.
They are. I got the chili limon ones last time. Those are good. And also the Fritos chili cheese.
Right now I'm at about 1,740 calories for the day.
Yeah, I can do that. Today I went to lunch with another Illusion employee. We don't work to get directly together, but she works in another area, and we went to lunch at Carrabba's, and I had a Caesar salad with shrimp on it. It was actually only like 500 calories just for the salad, so it wasn't too bad.
Well, with salads, it's always the dressing that kills you.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't count the free bread. I probably should have, but I had no idea how much I ate. I didn't eat that much. So, I'm just using it. I really haven't made a lot of changes other than just counting out how much I eat. Just trying not to eat quite as much of the garbage, but still enjoying it.
Yeah, well, that's where you start, counting and seeing where you're at and then seeing where you got to go to.
Yep.
Making changes until you get there.
It's like Saturday might be a lost cause because we're going to the state fair.
Well, that happens, and you just, you you make sure to be more strict on the next days. You don't like right. drop your calories too far on the following days, or you'll end up like binging. But right. just, you know, be cautious for several days in a row. And
well, one of my favorite places to eat in there, I don't even know if they do it anymore. They used to, in the Ag building, do a smorgasbord in the upper floor, which is meat, and even if they did it, I wouldn't do it. I would do something else. And usually we only make out, like, I might have, like, one major thing, like a sandwich and a pop, or, something like that. And then maybe a little snacky-like things as we walk around. But I walk around a lot, too. Probably what I'll do is, before we go into the fairgrounds, I will hit the walk button on my watch and just track that as my exercise for the day. And we'll walk around a lot, because there's a lot of, booths where they're selling crap like chamois and God knows what else. I might, if there's a company there that does the solar panels, I might talk to them while I'm there. If I ever do put solar on the house, I'll probably end up putting a battery pack as well, because odds are in the winter I probably wouldn't end up using it as much, because Ohio doesn't get near as much sun as Texas does. So whatever sun I get, I want to store it, you know. We did have quite a few storms roll through here lately. In fact, let me look at the radar now. We might be getting more.
Man, we've got storms rolling through here so fast these days, I don't even know they happened until after they happened.
Yeah, I know,
like,
right?
I go outside, I'm like, wait, why is it all wet outside?
Mm-hmm.
It's sunny.
I got a line. Well, there's a line up north by Marion. It seemed like it was building, but then as it got closer to the Columbus area, it died off. So it's really spotty. And that's the good thing is the most severe crap has skirted around Columbus and around Grove City too. So, I mean, we haven't needed the really bad stuff. Just a lot of rain, though. And the other weird things, too, I noticed, like, Monday? Because the one thing I've started doing, just to kind of break up the monotony of going to do my cardio at the gym, is I'll walk over to, there's a park not far from us. I'll walk over there and do 3 laps and then walk back, and that's usually my workout, about the same length as what I do in the gym. But the nice thing is over at the park is there's 4 portals for Ingress. And I don't know if you've ever played Ingress, but Ingress was the first game Niantic brought out before Pokemon Go. Yeah, right. This came out before it, and I've been playing it ever since it came out. Not all the time, though. You know, I'll take breaks, but I've been maintaining that set of portals at that park for a while now. But so I'll walk over there and I'll power them all up and upgrade things and attack if somebody took my portals over and take them back. And I'll drive every once in a while. I'll go for a drive around town and I'll just maintain all the stuff that I do. Maintain it or take them. But that's, so it's a fun thing to do, and I'll, and then I can use the tracker feature on my watch to track that walk. You know, I don't walk as fast, but then I'm also getting hills, where I, at the gym, I typically don't put the, incline on much. I might every once in a while do it. But that seems to help, you know, because there's sometimes where I just, or if I wake up late, you know, whereas if I count the time it takes me to get there and back, I would be late for work. So I just walk that time outside. That way I can get the workout and still have plenty of time to take a shower and all that before I go to work. Because even though I work from home, I don't like to sit and work when I'm feeling all skeezy and easy after sweating. You probably do the same thing when you run, huh, Dan?
Do what?
Take a shower before you actually start to work after your run.
Oh, I usually, before I even take a shower, I go down and jump into the bay these days. But, yep. I've been biking and actually swimming more than running. So I go biking Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and swimming Tuesday, Thursday.
A little easier on the joints.
Oh, yeah, because the running was really killing my plantar fasciitis, so I have to take a break for a bit.
Well, when you do run, do you still do the huaraches?
I have not. I have a shoe with a very thin sole.
Okay.
Yeah, because my plan. So that's the thing. That's the stuff I've been reading. If you've been exercising consistently for like 20 plus years, something's gonna give. You know, and that sucks, you know, so that's what gave on me. It's that plantar fasciitis. So,
and you ain't getting any younger either.
No, it's not. So I got to take a break from it. But hopefully I'll be back again in the fall, especially when it's tougher to run when it's like, I mean, ride the bike when it's really cold and icy. Or snowy. Right,
Joe? I don't have to worry about the ice and snow too much here.
Don't.
Just the, it's so hot I can't breathe.
Yeah, there's that.
So, yeah, I might start riding my bike too.
I definitely haven't been getting in as many bike rides as I would like because, you know, most of the time, even by 9 o'clock, it's still like 100 degrees here, and that's a big nope.
Nope. But, you know, you talk about that, the heat, Joe. That's with me and my pit boss. It's like, could have gone out and fired up the pit boss and did the hamburgers on that. But did I? Nope, I fired up my Cuisinart griddler, and that's how we cooked the burgers tonight.
Do you have one of those, what is it called? Stands? I guess it's, I don't know what it's called, but you can,
Yeah, it's a trainer stand. I do.
I did.
I have the stand still, but you need a bike with a specific skewer.
Okay.
And I had one bike that had the correct skewer on it, but some of the spokes broke, and I haven't gotten that fixed yet. So I have another bike that I'm riding, but it definitely is not set up for that. So right now I can't use the stand.
Mm.
And I've even purchased the tools to try and take the whole like axle apart in the back so that I can move everything over that I needed to, and it just will not come apart.
Mm.
Either that or to replace the spokes, and like I said, I cannot get it apart to do any of the work. So
I'll have to take a short ride on my bike and see if the shifters are still shifting correctly. Yeah, because I haven't rode it since before we moved. So figure then maybe I could go riding around town on the bike instead of because most of the areas in town, like I can get to Walmart or even Meijer might be a stretch, only because the traffic is a lot more intense on 665. I can go mostly the rural roads, probably, instead of hitting 665 to get there. But that'd be nice, because I can probably ride, definitely ride further than I can walk. And it would be a good to change things up here and there every once in a while.
Well, I've been taking walks at lunch at work since I'm not getting a lot of other cardio right this minute. And, you know, I'm not going real fast. I'm doing like a 22 to 25 right. minute mile, and I'm doing 2 miles. And
right.
So I'm getting more steps in, so overall I'm burning calories, but I
go,
should
yeah.
still be getting more, like, zone 2 cardio in, and there isn't a whole
yeah.
lot I can do about it, because I just don't want to in this 100-degree heat.
I'm with you. Yeah, the took today off only because I just didn't feel like going to the gym this morning or walking. I just felt like being lazy. But that's okay. I still can get my 5 days in this week, so that's what I've been trying to do. 5 days of exercise.
Yeah, well, I am, you know, taking more rest days right now because, well, of the heat. So unless I get a good workout in the morning, it is unlikely in a lot of cases that I'm going to get a workout in the evening. So, like, yesterday
yeah.
I was supposed to do a second chest day, and so, but I pushed it out to today because it was really, really freaking hot to the point where I was, like, working inside instead of out in the garage. And then today I had to go into the office, and that makes it more difficult, and then right now it's just so ungodly hot.
Right. Now, I don't know what talking about over there, because maybe it's because I go early in the, you know, like before 7 usually. But my Planet Fitness, supposedly the air conditioning's broken over there. And while it hasn't been 100 degree hot up here, it's still been very warm. Like today hit 90. Today hit 90, and I think they're calling a heat wave tomorrow. Let's see. They're calling for a high at 91 tomorrow. And see what the humidity look like.
Yeah, there's a heat advisory until tomorrow, 8 p.m.
Yeah, well, ours goes until 9, I think. Oh, they're saying we have a 50% chance of storms tonight with a 40% chance tomorrow. Friday, it's going to be 94. Yeah, I definitely don't want to go to the fair Friday night. It'd be too damn hot. Then we're supposed to, Sunday is supposed to only be in the, or 70s. So. And I've been very happy, since we moved, I've been very happy with the power bill for this house. We're well insulated. They used, that foam that you shoot in the walls for the insulation on the outside walls, and then they got the blow-in insulation on top. So, you know, this house is pretty airtight when it comes to keeping it cooler in here. And a new AC unit, pretty efficient as well. You see, maximum heat index values are around 100 tomorrow, 100 to 105 on Friday. That's the heat index with the humidity.
Yum, 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 yum.
Humid.
That's what I like. What, here, I just, it gets too hot, I just jump in the bay.
We got a humidifier in our bedroom, mostly for the winter, but my wife has turned that damn thing back on. And I'm like... And one thing I got to do this week, probably Friday, I need to order another filter for the refrigerator, and then one for my SoClean for my CPAP mask. It's time to replace that too, and probably the first filter again too. At least the Canadian smoke has gone away.
Yeah, I heard the fires got bad again.
Yeah. It did. I think most of it now is happening like in British Columbia. Up in Canada. And it's been blown mostly the right direction this week. Heck, it's almost hurricane season for Dan.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it.
Maybe you might get lucky and they may miss you.
Well, we have been lucky so far. They either seem to go off into towards Richmond or out to sea after they blast the Outer Banks. So I hope that, you know, I don't want to see anybody get hit by a hurricane. But I hope it keeps missing us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's about that time to wrap it up.
It sure is. 10 o'clock.
Oh, man. Let's see.
Ohio Little Mess is open for papers.
There you go.
It's in September this year, not December. Moved it back towards some of its original time.
What happened?
I don't know.
In December, huh?
I think most people bitched about it. I would be one of them. I'm like, December is like one of my busiest months of the year for doing shit.
I would also add, it's busy, but you also run into the risk of having difficulty traveling there due to snow and ice.
That's true this year.
Yeah, so.
I delayed my departure from Columbus twice because of ice and snow this year. Because the stupid ice storm.
All right. So let's play us out.
Yep.
I hope you have a good week, everybody. Here are your promos and outros. Where'd it go?
You didn't. Did you?
Wait, did I mute this guy? Oh, that's probably what happened, isn't it? Wait. Why'd the intro work so well?
Oh.
Okay.
It's one of the mighty entities.
Alright. Okay. There we go. Let's try it again. Why are we having a problem? Why is this being a pain in my ass?
Okay.
Yeah, what the heck happens? Did I bump it? Alright, let me try this. Let's do this. Oh, it's a pain in my butt. Wait, let me make sure I'm gathering this connected in which goes around, boom, that connects into, what does this connect into? Wait a minute. Am I looking at the wrong thing? No, this just connects into here, which is going to get right there. Okay.
There you go. Nothing yet, but I saw your other computer rejoin.
Yeah, but why is it not... Why is it causing issues? Like, it doesn't want to... Let me try this again. Alright. That's just being such a pain in my ass. Alright, here we go. There we go. Alright.
I am short.
Yep.
Oh my god. It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
What she said. I bought my ticket for the Columbus Coffee Festival again.
When's that?
That is...
The hottest day of the summer?
No, it's September.
Oh, well, there you go, the hottest day of September.
It felt like it was... Well, last year, I think I wore pants last year. I can't remember. Instead of shorts, see. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. I'm going Saturday at 11 o'clock. I might actually try and bring more cash this time than I did last time. What is it? 23rd is when I'm going. 23rd and the 24th of September. So it should be not too bad. But, cause it is outside of the Ohio Historical Society, which is this area real close to the state fairgrounds. And they'll set them up inside, mostly inside, and they got some tents outside usually too. And they give you a cup when you walk in, and you basically walk around and drink coffee. Samples of coffee. Probably one of the most interesting ones I tried last year was, there was a company there that made a coffee soda, and it was pretty tasty.
Hmm.
And I also got a free can of Monster Java when I was there too. For some reason they had them there. I don't know why. At least the one that I really liked last year is going to be back. And that was Viking Coffee. And I'm trying to remember the name of the one I like. And if they're there again, I'm going to take a pound home. I know you're not a coffee drinker, though.
There you go.
The one I... Refined Savage Old Man Strength. That's the one I like. And it's what... And all of them put a little card out by the where their samples are and says, well, this coffee has notes of chocolate. Or this one has notes of whatever. To get you in most of the coffee you drink black. This one, it said it had notes of chocolate. And this is one of the very few, it said tasting notes are chocolate, berry, cocoa, and a fruity finish. And I like this one quite a bit. Is it a medium? Yeah. Oh no, it's a dark and medium roast blend. Dark roasted Kenyan and Colombian and a medium roast Burundi coffee. And it was really tasty. I'm going to have to get some. And I'm hoping that they had another one there that was really kind of interesting too. They had trying to remember what it was. Oh, it was a Vietnamese coffee place that's actually local to here, and they cured the coffee after roasting in whiskey barrels. That had a real good flavor to it too. You're more of a tea guy though, right?
Water.
Or water, yeah. I can't drink just water, though.
Coffee and whiskey barrel, so it gives it a whiskey aftertaste or a whiskey flavor?
Yeah, a little bit. Very little bit.
I'm not a big fan of whiskey.
Whiskey or bourbon. I can't remember if it's whiskey or bourbon. Well, same thing. Whiskey is bourbon.
Ugh.
Jeffrey gone 10 meters or 20 meters, but it sounds like it's pretty dead. Granted, it could be my shit antenna. I'll turn that off right now. But I got it set up on a little, I had this little like side table thing I got. I might have to get another one so I can put one on both sides of my chair. To have something to put my drink on. And going to the state fair Saturday, probably.
I hate this.
And Joel doesn't ride the fair rides. Only reason I go there is to walk around and eat. Wish I would have picked my tickets up earlier, though.
Oh, la 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 la. Guess I better do this.
Mm-hmm.
God damn, I hate this.
What'd you do?
I have to migrate my Minecraft account before September. I started this account like way back in the early days of Minecraft, and I don't use it. My daughter uses it. So I better migrate it. And of course, when I try to migrate it, it tells me there's a temporary problem with the service. Please try again. Fucking Microsoft. Piece of shit.
Yep.
Oh, where is everybody?
Good question.
We don't need them.
Now, yeah. If I can figure out how to get my hotspot to automatically connect to my car's Wi-Fi, that'll be a win. It uses OSTAR software, which is based on OpenWRT, and for some reason I just can't get it to automatically connect. It worked fine. Works fine if I like power it off and then power it back on here at the house, but not in the car. And it's the same freak network name I used, so it should just pick right up. And I'm going to the console now to see where that station's from I'm listening to here.
The hell vehicle do I have registered? This 2010 Toyota.
Is it time for you to renew a plate?
Yeah, but I don't own any Toyotas. That must have been Paige's old van, but I thought that was earlier than 2010. Man, what do I know?
Well, Luke's will probably be a little weird. A9GC's from Cape Girardeau, Missouri. The other station that's on there is from Arkansas. I'm cheating, though. It's using the interweb, so it doesn't really count.
Alright. Well, we should get this show started. There's plenty to talk about. You got a lot. I got a lot. We all got a lot. This is 1012.
I don't see Joe or anybody else, so it might just be you and I.
Well, let me make sure. Oh, I should just go to the... Let's just go to the website, which I need to update, and I need to do a whole bunch of other things. I need to get all this shit moved over to Internet Archives, so I dropped the ball on doing that. And all I have to do is run a freaking script. That's all I have to do. Well,
sounds like me.
Yeah.
It's like another thing I've been doing is I print off some wire management, trying to clean up the rats.
Oh my goodness! Wire management.
Well, at least hide.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. You know what? Let's start the show before we get too deep into the weeds here and start talking about a bunch of different things. So, 2012. Here we go. Boom.